Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
Well, Nick, this show was bookended by what was hyped on Raw. The storyline between RK-Bro and the Bloodline, and in particular the Usos and the tag team titles. Do you think it was an effective follow-up, a satisfying follow-up on the ongoing storyline after that, after they dropped the match from the pay-per-view, closing out the show by saying there will be a tag team unification match next week on SmackDown, as McAfee and Cole tout that this isn't WrestleMania, it's not SummerSlam, it's SmackDown on Fox next week. Did this work for you?
It definitely worked for me. This is, despite the roundabout way of getting here, where we needed to be probably in the first place, and is the convergence of the best acts in all of WWE right now. I mean, despite trying to bring in and out other people in the roster to go up against Roman Reigns, the truth of the matter is the energy has been for a long time with the RK-Bro act. And having that duo really be opposite Roman Reigns and all things Roman Reigns is the top tier of what WWE can deliver right now. And it's probably the most exciting combination that you could possibly find. It feels fresh. It feels dynamic. I haven't seen Randy Orton seem so young and excitable, yet also wise and old at the same time. The whole act really worked for me tonight. And I thought Roman Reigns continues to excel. And I think that's the good news of where SmackDown is right now. It felt like a concise show. It felt like things were all intertwined, but in a good way and for the right reasons. And despite probably having the smallest amount of people actually on the show than it probably had been in a long time, it still felt like a complete show, which is probably the best thing WWE can offer at this time.
Yeah. The dynamic with the Bloodline, if we step back for a minute, I want to get your assessment, because your 5-month suspension is over, Nick. You're back on in the co-host chair here. And so I haven't had a chance to talk to you on a post show about the state of the Bloodline. Where are they now? And what do you think of the dynamic with Orton and Riddle and the Usos? In terms of how it reflects on both of the acts, because they're from separate brands, they're playing off of that a little bit. Is this actually helping? And by the way, I'm intrigued too by the knee by Riddle to Reigns. You know, as we look at the roster of who can face Reigns, and Reigns saying he smashed everybody. I know Orton dropped John Cena's name, so all of a sudden the antenna goes up. Ooh, what's up there? But Riddle aiming for Reigns with a knee to the face. To me, this added a different kind of vibe and energy to Bloodline, the feud with RK-Bro in particular, and tonight especially.
I love the knee. I loved everything about that. You know, Wade, I've been thinking that where we're headed is a very solid triple threat match between Randy Orton, Riddle, and Roman Reigns. I think that is ultimately where we're going to go. And the navigation of the dynamic between Riddle and Randy being tested through that match and leading to them having to split off and go for the singular individual in Roman Reigns. I think when you ask me about the state of the Bloodline, it has been a very long time since we've talked about it. And you know, this is an act that I have absolutely been in love with. I think it was for the most part pitch perfect all the way through. Somewhere along the lines, there is something too anonymous about the Usos that has just developed. They have become a little bit too much of side characters without identity. And the whole henchman thing works when it needs to. However, I think what was most exciting about the initial Bloodline coming together was that we were coming off of the dynamic of having Jey Uso's personality really be shining through on SmackDown on a weekly basis, and then Jimmy returning, and then the navigation of that dynamic of the twins. They've become a little bit too background for me, and there's something, again, too anonymous of them holding the tag team champions and just being great wrestlers in the background holding them, that I think something is missing. There's a little bit more opportunity that could be created there. you know, with all this talk about Roman potentially taking time off or a need to find others to rise up the card if he does take that time off, I do think there needs to be an effort to further develop the Usos act. It's almost like something you take for granted of they're going to be behind Roman and they're going to be great at what they do. And for the most part, they are. I do think having them eventually be the ones who are obviously next week taking on RK-Bro, they're obviously the right people to do that. And we're going to get a great match out of the whole thing. I do think also there's a tell in the need of Roman's face that ultimately, try as you might to make the Usos the prime element of the storyline, it's always going to go back to Roman.
Yeah, and what is the timeline for something else happening with Riddle and Reigns? Or is that just not – I don't call it a red herring, but it just Reigns happened to be in the middle. Is it about Reigns being worked up about this and maybe getting involved next week in some way? Or is this teasing something between Reigns and Riddle one-on-one as a big singles match either on TV or on a premium live event?
Yeah, I don't think we're going to get the singles match. You know, this reminds me very much of, I think it was the summer of 2001, right when the invasion angle was starting, when Steve Austin had just turned heel and there was the rise of Chris Benoit and Chris Jericho, and they'd just beaten Austin and Triple H for the tag team championships, and then Triple H fell injured with his torn quad. And then that King of the Ring, they had a triple threat match, which wasn't very good and should have been much better than it was, but I digress. That is where I think where we're going, where they aren't necessarily feuding, they're jockeying for the position, and then, of course, there's the tensions that are inherent within there. I would have thought we were headed towards a SummerSlam collision for something of this magnitude, but I think we're probably headed towards Money in the Bank pay, maybe, or, yeah, I would say probably that. You know, they have a big arena to sell out. I think those are, again, the very best acts in all of WWE right now for people to get behind at a main event level. And, you know, it's always so telling to me about – yeah, you know, where when you had that six-man tag and really when you see all of the cast come together, who really feels like a star and who doesn't? I think it's very telling that RK-Bro feels like they were the cream that rose to the top with Drew McIntyre still being on the screen. And I think that this is where WWE needs to go. You know, and at this point, these are tentpole events. Money in the Bank is now, I think, in many ways, just as important as SummerSlam. So to put a big match on that card probably sounds about right.
Okay, one more thing, and then we'll move to callers and emails and other topics from the show. What happens next Friday with these two teams?
Well, do I think that we're actually going to have a unification? Probably not. I think that there is still room to actually have a pay-per-view or a premium live event, I apologize, showdown for such a title. But if we do have an actual unification of these championships, I think it should be on the Usos. And I think that that's when the fissure begins between the RK-Bro act because, you know, try as you might to have them want to stick with the tag team championships, when you flirt with the WWE championship and the Universal Championship, you know, it's kind of hard as an individual to want to go back to the boy band when they've already seen the Grammy in their future. You know what I mean? And I think that that's where we go.
All right, very good. Let's pause and introduce ourselves formally and then move on to other topics and our callers and emails. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, May 13th, 2022. And I am Wade Keller, the host of the program, the editor, publisher, founder of the long-running Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter and the website pwtorch.com and the host of a variety of free and VIP podcasts throughout the week. And I'm joined by Nick Barbati, who is a PW Torch contributor, a VIP podcast co-host with Tom Colihue. Did I get the name right, Nick? Sometimes I forget who you're co-host.
Well, the show might be the correct name, but I prefer Star. I think that seems to fit a bit more.
Yeah. Yep. But it's his name's Tom, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes.
All right. Very good. Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Adventure. The name. Oh, his first name's in the name of the show. That should help me. Usually a VIP exclusive show. Very WWE central show and a great way to kick off your weekend. Take your dog on a walk and download. If you're a VIP member, Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Adventure, and they'll talk about SmackDown and all things WWE. Go VIP, pwtorch.com/goVIP. Nick, how does it feel like to be back here co-hosting live? A bit of an adrenaline rush?
Wait, I am so excited to be back. I don't know whose mother I offended to be put on a hiatus for 5 months, but, you know, I think the people are hungry for it. You know, I always told you before, I'm not a housewife. I'm the Real Housewives type thing, but I'm a friend. You bring me in, spice it up, and then you send me to the back of the line for a little while. That's okay. I'll be willing to have that role.
You've done some things in between there, though.
I know I have. I got the big call up to the WrestleMania post show. That was such an honor after you introduced me after announcing all of the people who were too busy to be there that night. I was so... So honored.
That is not true. I would never.
What a dream come true. Yes.
All right. So we have a live format here, live streaming format. Most of you download the show, you know, late Friday night over the weekend, and that's cool. But if you happen to be listening to us live, and thank you for live streaming us, you are invited to call, and you're also invited to email. You don't even have to be live streaming to email us. The email address is wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. You can email us during or right after Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown if you want to be part of the post show. And you can also email us anytime throughout the week on any topic, and your email might be read on our flagship or mailbag editions of our Blue Logo show. Speaking of which, Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net will be on the Tuesday flagship next week, and you can start sending in your questions and topics now. Right now, that's when it starts. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. The phone number is 347-215-8558. That is 347-215-8558. And when you call, be sure to push 1 on your keypad. That flags you on our switchboard so that we know you want to be brought onto the show. And I think that covers it. So, Nick, how about we start taking calls and move into some other topics, too, if that's where callers lead us.
Let's do it.
All right, cool. All right, we'll go first up, because it's a tradition, to caller in Rattleboro, Vermont.
Wow.
It's been a while since the Knicks have been on together. Caller Nick, welcome.
Nikki, how you doing?
Listen, the Nikki's Club are back. We call this an invasion or a conference or, you know, something, a reunion at least.
Have to shout out Nikki number 3, Sean. I'm sure, hopefully he's listening.
Yeah, I don't know about all that. He throws too much shade on Twitter. So, you know, we'll stick to Nikki number 1 and number 2 for right now.
Okay, I'm good with that. Anyway, good to talk to you. And Wade, always great to talk to you.
Absolutely.
I just had to bring up the fact that the trumpet or the trombone is back. And I'm really upset. I mean,
my day was going so well.
Give him a crown.
My day was going well.
Take the trumpet.
Yeah.
I was.
And
like,
I'm not against Nick, I'm not against trombones. I am against Xavier playing them in the middle of a match with such a self-satisfied, delightful demeanor. Trombones are fine. It's just Xavier plus trombone plus match in progress is obnoxious.
Yep. I heard it and I went, oh my God, it's back. But that's just some silliness aside. I wanted to get your guys' take on having Raquel Rodriguez, whose Spanish accent slips in and out. I love it. I love the fact that she like lays it in and then she pulls it back. Have her go up against Ronda, have a really show strong, but then ultimately, of course, have to lose. Do you think that's beneficial to her, or is it a bad call by WWE to do that?
I think that's a super interesting topic. Co-host Nick, it was a big TV moment, a memorable moment. I thought a good match, but she lost, and she lost not instantly, but not in a 20-minute or 15-minute grueling classic. Does this define her down right away or elevate her to instant relevancy because she lasted as long as she did and got that spotlight moment against Ronda?
Oh, my goodness. It was super beneficial to her. I actually loved everything about that segment with the exception of one thing, which we'll get to. But I think that I don't think how this could be in any way a definition down for Raquel. I think there is no better platform for a female performer in WWE right now to be in than in the championship picture. I mean, it's almost like if you're not in the championship picture on either brand, then you're really, really way down the card. So the fact that she was in the conversation, there were no issues with the match. In fact, it was a really quite enjoyable match. She looked so strong, and I got to tell you, I thought she brought out a really strong side of Ronda. I thought Ronda looked really smooth tonight, and they just their chemistry worked, and you just felt like you were seeing something that you know in the future you're going to be seeing again. You know, Wade, I said this to you before. We co-hosted the show when I think, was it Retribution debuted and Raw Underground was there, like back in the dark era of COVID. And I would say to you, Wade, like you're watching this and you know in a couple months, like you're not going to be watching this or even talking about this again. Well, this feels like something you're going to be seeing again. I thought Raquel really did well. Now, her Hilaria Baldwin accent, yes, is a problem that goes in and out. But my bigger problem was the forced smile. That just seems like someone told her, when you go out there, keep that smile on you at all times. And it felt like, you know, I wasn't alive for the Jolly Giant days of Andre the Giant, but I assume that's what at some point he was instructed to do, because you always see pictures and footage of him always smiling when he was a baby face. But, you know, if you can strip that back, I think that there's, you know, a real marketability in the act. And I just thought that, you know, Raquel really held her end of the bargain on this one. And I thought it was a super strong match and actually really beneficial towards Ronda. You know, Ronda is always on the cusp of coming across as being too much on scholarship, too much of privilege. And this felt like, okay,
and weird.
She's helping along this new act. She's not afraid to be in there with a new act. And, you know, was, you know, just in the ring a week after she had just been in that match with Charlotte, which was excellent. I think it was a great segment, all things involved. And this one, you know, as I said with Ronda before, you watch these matches and you, like, or segments with her, and you just wait for something to break, or you're just, like, hold your breath that something doesn't go too wrong or too awkward. And I thought this thing, all things considered, worked quite well for all involved.
I think you hit on several points across my mind. I think Ronda is always, I think the default position with a lot of fans is she's a privileged celebrity who's doing this for the money and not really into pro wrestling, or if she is, she didn't really pay dues in the right way and all of that. And she, you know, obviously is a little bit weird and was really upset with fans booing her when, you know. So you have a lot of baggage, but when she's coming out there 5 days after that match with Charlotte, and I thought a good ring entrance, good body language, good promo, and then issues an open challenge, and it's against not Natalya and some throwaway match that, you know, is going to be good because they've trained together and Natalya's a veteran who can lead the way, but against someone else who hasn't really established herself on SmackDown and is not a surefire to have a passable match with Ronda live on SmackDown. And Ronda went out there and had a smooth and compelling and good match. Credit to Ronda, credit to Raquel. I was pleasantly surprised. I'm with you. I presented the question to you, and I have the same answer as you, even though I think some people will think, wait, why not build up to that moment? Why have her lose right away? God, that would be such a moment if they built to it for 3 months or 6 months. I think this, I don't think someone's crazy for thinking that. I disagree, though. I think this put her on the map, and it's something that she can come back from. Also, and co-host Nick, I'll throw to you first on this. Tell me what you think Raquel's character is, heel, face, and just kind of more general than that. And is losing as a baby face a precursor to her having, you know, just going heel, and then it's a fresh matchup all over again, sort of like Omos loses to Lashley, but when you get MVP in his corner, suddenly that changes the dynamic within the way WWE tells their stories.
Yeah, as I said, I think the tell was in the smile. The smile was too obvious by half, in that it was, we were trying to maintain the I'm happy and, you know, I'm a really upbeat person type thing that is just pretty much quickly being established so that it can quickly be altered. And I think it had to a real quick heel turn. I think that that's where this is. I think that technically she's a face right now. In a few weeks, that wouldn't be my same answer.
Caller Nick, back to you.
Yeah, no, I could see actually is, if they potentially turn her heel and then she and Lacey can go at it, and then they can roll back to the Raquel Ronda match, say at SummerSlam, or depending on, of course, what they're going to do with Sasha. I mean, do they keep her in the you know, in the tag team, but then do they have to turn her heel to face Ronda? Does Bayley come back to SmackDown, or does she go to Raw to fight? I mean, the WWE women's division is always tough because up at the top they spend a lot of attention, but you get no real sense of where, and listen, it's the same with the men's division now, but you get no real sense of where the next, you know, the next fish that's going to come up to the surface and take, you know, and take the hook. You know, you were discussing that Riddle's might be that guy for Roman. You've got two really strong babyface women's champions, and you know, it's going to be interesting to see where they fall out with all this, and do they move people around somehow with some trades or something?
Co-host Nick, what do you think?
Well, I don't know. You know, the Lacey Evans of it all, maybe it's just me. I just think this is a flop waiting to flop. And I don't view this as anything interesting. I don't think it's something that will connect in any real meaningful way with the crowd. Sure, could you imagine someone like Lacey Evans in a title match for another 1 monther before going right back down the card? Yeah, sure, why not? I mean, that wouldn't surprise me at all. The problem here is there's too many strong female acts that are now either back or on the verge of coming back, with Asuka being now back and Bayley on her way back. I mean, at some point, you know, and also recognizing, as you said, Sasha Banks is basically on pause. She's there. We're getting some of the greatest hits, and she's doing good work in the tag team division, sure. But, you know, this ultimately does feel just like as a holding pattern for her before coming on up back to where she belongs, which is as a singles act in the future. So, you know, I think that there's a lot of great acts that are there on both sides of on Raw and SmackDown for the champions to go up against. I feel like this path for Raquel, though, is a good one, though. And I think that, you know, when we talk, Wade, you may have referenced about others who were saying, like, oh, why you could have built this up after a few weeks and whatnot. Why? Why? What is the real benefit of having a Gunther-type debut for her and have her go through and run parallel to that? We're seeing that right now. You don't want too much of that at the same time. And also, quite frankly, let's get the act in there and see if they have it very early on. And I think she walked away today really, really showing that she has it. And I think what makes someone like Raquel different than someone like Lacey Evans is, you know, try as you might, you're not putting on anything new on Lacey Evans that we haven't already seen already. The story, sure, we're listening to it more and, you know, however they want to present that, either as a babyface or heel, whatever. We've seen her in the ring, though. I think with Raquel, it's when the one thing that's hard to ignore is not only her size, but quite frankly, the movement that went along with it. This is not Omos, who, again, had a better showing, I think, at Backlash than he did at WrestleMania, but it's still plodding and still a difficult watch. She wasn't a difficult watch this week and actually was quite a good compliment to Ronda, which means she'll probably be a good compliment to the other female acts as well.
Very good. I'll call her, Nick. Back to you.
Yeah, no, she's definitely imposing. I think she has a great look. I mean, you know, she's, you know, built like a true athlete, and I think that's a real positive. You get the same feel from Bianca to certain degrees that you get it from Becky, too. You know, this kind of, you know, athletic, you know, the exercise model look. You have a real athlete look. And I think that's, personally, I prefer that, you know, to what they're doing on NXT right now. Anyway, I mean, it's fun to watch, but I mean, you know, I really don't have anything else. I just, I heard Nick was on. And so I had to jump on, and I did send you some tweets for you and Tom to talk about. And, hopefully Sean is on and he'll have something else to say. And, enjoy the spring. It's definitely coming. We hit 80 today here up in Vermont. It was just gorgeous.
We hit 90 at 8 p.m. last night.
Whoa.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yep.
Are you sure you're still in Minnesota?
Oh, yeah. That's very Minnesota. I mean, I don't know. I mean, yeah. I mean, we hit 100. But, yeah, 90 in the midst of a stormy couple days. It felt weird. Because I saw snow on the ground like a week and a half ago. You know, I mean, it's a fast turnaround. So there wasn't a lot of snow, but there's still a little bit. Yeah.
I drove by Mount Snow like a week and a half ago, and there's still some snow on the trails. You know, it's like, what's going on here? But anyway, have a great week. Have a great weekend. Nick, huh?
I was going to say, usually the snow that remains is just the big piles that are plowed. And it's like, that's the last to go. It wasn't worth interrupting you to say that. But go ahead.
Oh, no, it's, you know, I can see some guy climbing up there with his rock skis, you know, doing a 20-foot run and then taking his skis off and walking down the mountain.
Yep.
Oh, my God, is this still going on, this conversation?
I can't believe it still is, Nick.
I'm sorry, I'm stealing Rich's
nice
fans.
To talk to you, Nick.
Okay, take care, Nick. Have a good one.
Coach Nick, any snow where you are?
Is there no producer on this show? Like, what is happening?
All right. Our number. Nick, you've Brattleboro and Nick, you've been knocked off the show. Co-host Nick has taken over. All right. Our phone number, 347-215-8558. If you call, push 1 and let us know you want to be on the show. We have more callers to get to. And so let's get to them. And we'll go to Jay in Michigan next. Jay, thank you for calling. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight? Go ahead, Jay.
Well, from Moscow.
Oh, I think we got a bad connection with you, Jay. We'll come back to you. All right, we'll go to Mike in Atlantic City. Mike, welcome. What's on your mind about SmackDown?
How you guys doing tonight?
Good.
Mike, I was just in Atlantic City yesterday. Should have met up with you.
We should have met. If you don't mind me asking, where'd you go? What casino? Tropicana?
Well, I chaperoned a trip to the resorts. But let me tell you something. Wait, I'm doing a plug. I'm in a play. Oh, there you go. Well, I'm in a play this summer at the Ocean Casino, which is the old Revel Casino. I'll be performing on June 18th at the Ocean. So,
What's your part? What's your role?
Well, I'm the villain. I'm the heel. It's called My Big Gay Italian Wedding, which is an off-Broadway show that now tours. I've been in the cast for the past 6 years, and it's my job to ruin the wedding. Wait, big surprise. There's a natural heel in there.
I love it.
June 18th, so yeah, I'm going to have to check it out.
Check it out, my guy.
By the way, WWE's coming to the Hard Rock in Atlantic City. I'm here on August 14th. Or the Sunday Stunner House Show. So I'm going to check that out.
Cool.
Yeah. But, some SmackDown was it was a good show. I think Rousey versus Raquel, that was, you know, a nice surprise. I didn't expect. At first, I'm like, nah, this isn't going to happen tonight. This is going to be maybe in a couple weeks or maybe at the next pay-per-view. I just didn't think it was going to happen. Then it actually happened. And, you know, and I was really glad. I was surprised it happened. I mean, I didn't think Rousey would wrestle on TV, you know, anytime soon. So, yeah, that was great. And it was a great match. And it definitely doesn't hurt Raquel because she's losing to Rousey. So I know there's going to be some fans that say she's hurt by this, but she's not at all. She lost to Rousey and in a good match, you know, not like she was squashed either.
Right. Yeah, and Rousey gets points for putting on a match. It was, you know, against, like I said, someone like Raquel who – just doesn't have as much of a track record as some of the opponents. Most of the opponents Ronda's faced, and she's out there working, you know. That's going to score some points with WWE fans.
Yeah. And it seems like Chelsea and Aaliyah, like they're having like a thing about who's going to face Rousey next. Do you think Rousey and Chelsea happens soon on TV or at a pay-per-view? It'll probably be on TV. I wish Chelsea would get a push. You know, I'm a pretty big Chelsea fan. I mean, she's a really good wrestler, and when she was heel, I think she did really good. I think she put a lot of effort in her promos, and she sounded good in her promos as a heel and put a lot of effort in them. And I think she could do it and succeed if WWE would give her the chance. What do you guys think about that and a future match with Rousey and Shelty?
Yeah, I liked that they explained that there were multiple people who at least are claiming they wanted to enter Rousey's challenge. We can doubt the veracity of their claim, perhaps, you know, or at least the details, but the idea that it wasn't just one person wanting a title match against Ronda without having to win a Royal Rumble or win a series of matches. You just have to be the first one out of the gate onto the stage. I like that they acknowledged others are trying to do that. I'm not sure the stories they told are 100% true, but Aaliyah saying she was locked in her locker room, accusing Shotzi of doing it, Shotzi saying Raquel pushed past her. I don't know if this is to set up an issue with Shotzi and Aaliyah more than it is, or as much as it is to set up future matches for both of them, but Shotzi, Ronda, does that work for you, Nick? And yeah, just what you think of their involvement in this.
Well, wait, I like you very much like that explanation. I appreciated it. It felt like, oh, you know, I never really thought of it like that when they do these open calls that there might be a rush to the door. Like that really worked for me. I think we're going to see it on TV, and I think it's going to be very soon. Wouldn't surprise me if it was next week. I think that, yes, it might feel special to have Ronda wrestle live on TV, and I agree with you. It's like when I was watching it, I was almost just waiting for the pause to be put on and then say, okay, it'll be next week or in 2 weeks or whatnot. But you have to remember, I mean, at this point, this isn't quite frankly the same Ronda from a few years ago. I mean, the novelty has worn off. The potion is gone at this point. And now she wants to be there and she wants to be the champion. She has to fill the spot that was left behind by Charlotte Flair. And you can't just at this point, I don't think the explanation would work, to just have her be wrestling on the premium live events. It just doesn't work. We already have Roman in that lane. You can't have the other championship in that lane as well without the shows losing a little bit of luster. And I think Charlotte would carry a lot of that weight on the show by serving as the champion who was very, very present on the shows. And I think now Ronda is going to have that pressure as well. And I thought that this was, if you're a Shotzi fan, I think this was very good news to have her be so, you know, overtly interested in the championship in that backstage segment. And I think that is something you can anticipate. And there also seems to be a recognition of now is the time and against Ronda to have some of these other acts kind of step up. So if you really like her, I think that you should leave the show pretty excited for what is possible. And I think it could happen as early as next week.
All right, Mike, back to you.
Yeah, and hopefully they'll get some time, though. Hopefully Rousey won't squash her, you know, in a squash match. Hopefully it'll be, like, a competitive match. Because I think the two of them could do a good match, you know, if given time.
Yeah, I think there seems to be a recognition that Rousey needs to be presented quite carefully in this go-around to not turn people off.
Yeah.
You know, Wade, it still shocks me every time, even when you were kind of recapping her first run, like how upset she was when people turned her. I think that is just crazy to me that like anybody would like get so, you know, hurt by that. But okay, but if we are dealing with that, if you really want to avoid that, you treat this segment with respect. And it doesn't mean, listen, there are times when Rousey should win definitively. Absolutely. You can't just, you know, do the complete opposite of that and have her in there with, you know, marathon matches with Aaliyah. We don't need that. But if there are people that, you know, but to have her destroy would create a resentment in the crowd, you have to avoid those moments.
Yeah, you're right. Like, she shouldn't have a real competitive match like with Aaliyah or, you know, but maybe someone like Shelty, you know. Yeah, I get what you're saying, definitely there. Like, she should, for it to come off, you know, is believable. Yeah, she should squash some people. And
yep.
Even do squash matches. Like, I'm glad they're bringing back the squash matches, by the way. Yeah, I'm glad. What do you guys think about that? Like, I'm glad they're bringing back these matches.
In the right context, I think they're smart to do. I think we're past the era, like, the 1980s syndicated shows, Superstars of Wrestling and Wrestling Challenge, where, you know, just one squash after another. I mean, it would be – honestly, I'd love to have, like, a throwback episode of Raw or SmackDown where it's just, you know, Vince McMahon can't do the announcing, but, you know, reminiscent of that era of just one squash after another and, you know, just, like, replicate the format. I mean, I'm not saying, like, it'd be good for business or bad for business. I'm just saying for me personally, it would be fun to see today's characters and wrestlers presented in a way that was once the primary way that wrestlers' characters were you know, that fans became familiar with them and their moves and their finishers. But yeah, I mean, when you're trying to get a new act over and establish their moves, you know, why not? And, you know, they've been doing that. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I don't think it always just needs to be the new act. I mean, I would like to honestly see them, you know, weave in every once in a while a squash match for an established act to kind of just almost like hit reset,
yeah.
Remind everybody how impactful mm-hmm. their finishers are and their typical moves are, and just keep it pushing. I think you can even do that once a
I agree.
Week on both, like on not on each show necessarily, but on a SmackDown or Raw, pick a show for the week and do that once. Listen, because as much as I too, Wade, in theory, would love more squash matches. I mean, you can also already see that happening, and then just see everyone, this is ridiculous, why is this happening, this is boring. You know, the tweets just write themselves, you know, after a little while. But, yes, I agree with you, though, it feels beneficial to all involved. Go ahead, Wade.
Real quick, yeah, I think what would surprise people as they're hate-tweeting squash matches is that they would be missing the fact that ring entrances, short matches, and big signature moves are three of their favorite things in wrestling.
Yeah.
And by complaining, they're actually missing an efficient delivery of a lot of the things that they watch wrestling for. And again, it doesn't mean it has to come at completely displacing other things that in modern wrestling we like, but ring entrances, signature moves, and short attention spans so we get in and out to the next thing are things that I think people would actually be surprised that they enjoy and that they're overrating how much they enjoy 50-50 booking with distraction finishes that last 7 minutes with a commercial break in the middle. It's not like that's this like great thing that would be displaced by having a squash match here and there instead.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't even think people right now are the prospect of it would get many people complaining. I think in reality, then all of a sudden it would come out. Or even if not complaining, just disinterest. But here's the thing, and this is what Tom and I talk about often on our show, is, you know, not everybody can be at the top always. And that would be such a nice way to keep people in the conversation without overexposing them or, you know, having them have to lose down the card just to at least keep them on the show. Those are the things that do damage. The other thing about it is when you have an act like Gunther come in and they're defeating, you know, the squash match performers, what planet did they just drop in from? Why is that so, like, it just doesn't make any sense that they appear for him but for nobody else. Like, I think that would go, like, a long way in terms of making those matches feel less jarring. And also just make the universe feel bigger, right? Like, it's kind of a cool concept to think like there's an unlimited amount of wrestlers, but these are the top tier ones that you're seeing. But because you have all these other jobbers that are coming in and out of there, that these really are the prime of the prime. But the problem is we don't see all these other acts. We only see the main stage performers. And when you see them as a full cast, you realize how small the number really is. And the world suddenly feels a lot smaller than your imagination should allow it to be. So there's a real benefit from having the squash matches. One thing I did not like about this show, and you might think I'm crazy, Wade, I did not like showing Gunther backstage. I didn't like it at all. I think there is such a novelty of having him just be in the live audience and making that grand entrance. I didn't like the normalization of him and just having him be like every other act. Was the chop fantastic? Sure. But there's something about him, and I said it last week on Nick and Tom's, is he is Yokozuna in his debut in 1993, where when he comes out, like, it feels otherworldly. It feels like a shock to the system. And I really, really did not like the idea of having him involved in the backstage. I actually hated it. Absolutely.
I didn't have feelings that you did as far as seeing him backstage, but I get what you're saying. Do you know what I didn't like about that segment?
I don't like that you disagreed with me, but go ahead.
I did not like that they just happened to be standing there when Drew Gulak was goaded into going and issuing a challenge by Ricochet to them. Like, I just don't like implausible coincidences in my wrestling shows. And I know that, you know, causes extra work for people who script them. But that annoys me. Just like it annoys me when there's a wrestler running into the ring like Baron Corbin to attack somebody from behind, right in front of the announcers. And the announcers play dumb until he enters the camera's vision. And then they act surprised. Because to me as a viewer, now I lose the impact of Corbin attacking him is shifted to, why did the announcers not say something before it ended up in the view of the camera? I just feel it's manipulative and I don't know, condescending for WWE to think the audiences aren't going to notice these coincidences and be bothered by them.
Okay.
Now I didn't agree with your point. Would you have agreed with mine if you weren't bitter?
No, yeah, maybe. Here's the thing. It's not that I disagree with you. Actually, I'm thinking about it, Wade, because I have to say, if I were an announcer, I would not be looking at the ring. I'd be looking at the screen. So,
well, but in that case, it was right in front of them.
I get it. No. Yeah. I get it. I actually considered that, too.
Yeah.
And, yeah, no, I see exactly what you're saying. To me, it doesn't stick out as much as it does to you, but the fact that it's sticking out to you means it's a problem, right? So I'm not going to diminish, you know, what you're saying like you did to me because I don't agree with you. What I'm saying is it's just not how I would, like I said, if you put me in an announcer role, I would be so in the screen, I quite frankly wouldn't even be looking what's around me. So that didn't really shock me, but I get it. I could see why you would do that.
And by the way, I didn't disagree with you. I just didn't agree with you.
Oh, yeah. Your cadence was real lovely. I understand.
All right, Mike, back to you. You're still here. What have you got for us?
Yeah, this switch to Sasha and Naomi against Shayna Baszler and Natalya. I thought that was a good match. And I think Sasha and Naomi are making the women's tag team titles feel a lot more important. Like somebody said earlier online, you know, they're bringing them everywhere they go, you know, doing media interviews with them. And it's coming off, you know, as the tag titles are really important. So I think this is good for the women's titles. And hopefully they'll have a good run. Like, how long do you think they'll be champs for? Like, do you see them holding the belts possibly till SummerSlam? Could it be all the way till WrestleMania next year? And who could actually beat them? Is it going to be just two random women from NXT UK? Or NXT, or are they even on the main roster now? Like, who do you see, and how do you see the women's tag team titles now? Do you think they're more important? I think Sasha and Naomi are coming off good.
Yeah, Nick, you said earlier, you know, Sasha's not, you know, in the main mix singles-wise, but it does seem like by having Sasha in the tag division, I think it's helping elevate the tag division more than it's pulling Sasha down, in part because of some of the things that Mike has said and how they're portrayed. How do you feel about what's their contrived nickname? The Boss and Glow connection. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you. I think that I think it's going very, very well. Honestly, much better than I thought it was going to. I think you're right. I think Sasha is not being, you know, defined down. I think she's elevating the belts around her. And I think the answer is they're going to be champion until they need Sasha Banks at the top. And at that point, I got to be honest with you, I don't think the conversation is there's going to be much care to the conversation of how do you take the championships off them. I think two random women from the streets of Atlantic City could take the championships off of them, and then there would be a conversation about it again. Because at some point, Sasha Banks does transcend this whole tag championship. And that's okay. That is okay, by the way. I think for right now, the championships feel more important than they have ever. And I think that that's an amazing thing. And I also think it's a compliment to Natalya and Shayna Baszler. That act is working as well. And the matches and the chemistry between those four women is really quite good. And so I think, yeah, in general, I think it doesn't feel like such an unnecessary segment anymore. It actually felt like, oh, there's some level of importance here. And, I mean, that's amazing in its own right. But I think that that's on the back of the hard work Sasha has put in for the past couple of years and the respect that's on her. And there does seem to be a level of care being put on her presentation still to understand that, yes, you're at this level right now, but also there's a need for protection. And that's the good news for the future for her. And I think, you know, to your point, I think that this is the best that the championships have looked in a while, but I don't think it matters. And I got to be honest with you. I don't think they'll be champions by SummerSlam. I think by SummerSlam, my hope is Sasha Banks would be challenging for the championship.
All right, Mike, anything else you want to bring up before we move on?
Yeah, I agree with you. I want Sasha and Naomi to have a good run, a decent run, but by SummerSlam, yeah, I hope Sasha, you know, challenges. Like I said last week on here, Sasha and Rousey would be a match I would really want to see again. They killed it at the Rumble that one year, So I'd love to see a rematch with them too. I talked about it last week. I wish it would be at Hell in the Cell next month. They would kill it inside of the cell, Rousey and Sasha. That's a dream match for me, them two inside of the cell.
Sure, and you know, got to remember, I mean, there's also Sasha versus Bianca that's still out there. That was there's not much business there if there's a change. So, I mean, there's importance that Sasha has waiting for her, and that again, that's something worth being excited about.
All right, cool. Mike, thank you. Good to hear from you. Have a good weekend.
Yep. Good call. Thanks a lot. Yep.
Yep, you bet. All right, we will try Jay in Michigan again, see if we got a better connection this time. Jay, how you doing?
Hey, what's going on, Wade? Can you hear me now?
Yeah, sure can.
So, you know, it was a couple things, actually. I kind of wanted to touch on that tag team situation. So, you know, I could be in the minority here. I think that, well, I'm not in the minority as far as the callers go, because it seems like, you know, people are digging it. But I think this seems to be one of the most consistent babyface runs. It's just as far as character-wise for Sasha Banks that she's had. I mean, like, she really, really feels like a babyface. She really feels like she's into this and investing, where other times as a babyface, it just seemed like she was just kind of biding her time until she turned heel. Like, it didn't even feel believable or convincing. So, you know, I'm actually pleasantly surprised at the work that she's doing as a, you know, in the tag team. And, you know, not much that you guys probably could add to that, but the real thing I wanted to discuss was Wade. I probably called in about a month ago, and, you know, I made the claim that WWE, this was like right, probably maybe like the night after SmackDown after Mania, and, you know, Nakamura had come out to presumably challenge Roman Reigns, and I made the claim that it didn't feel like WWE had a plan for Roman with these titles, and you instructed me to wait and let it play out a little bit, which I have, and here we stand, you know, nothing seemingly in place, and with all of the rumors and speculation running around that Roman is going part-time, which I'm fine with, you know what I mean? And, you know, there's a lot of different things going on. I mean, a lot of different reports out there. But ultimately, it just seems weird that, again, they put both these titles on him. And as he so eloquently said in his promo, nobody wants to step up, which is beyond me that he would have both titles, yet nobody has stepped up to challenge him. So, you know, where do you stand on that? What do you feel about my case and how I feel about the situation?
Well, I think some things happened in between. I don't think they would have done that segment if they didn't have plans. But that was at a time when there wasn't a six-man main event at Backlash. There was a tag team unification match. So it seemed logical they were heading towards a Nakamura-Reigns match, and then they changed their mind, and that manifested a couple weeks later on TV, but it led to the disappearance of Shinsuke from the Reigns sphere. And then they reintroduced it last week, I think it was, when Sammy was eavesdropping from behind a trailer. And now it's back in the mix. And when you add to it the possibility of Reigns negotiating a different kind of schedule, that also intervened and probably changed what, you know, WWE doesn't get people excited about matches they're not going to deliver on. They don't hint at matches they're not going to deliver on, sometimes to a fault. And in this, so, I mean, I don't know if you're framing it as like, I was right, you know, and I told you so, see, but I look at that and I go, I see some things that happened afterwards, and I think they had plans, and I think those plans changed, and we saw in front of our very eyes the plans changed, because Reigns ended up in the main event, six-man match rather than a one-on-one match. Nick, your take on that?
Yeah, I actually don't think any of that is bad news for Shinsuke Nakamura, if that's what the conversation is. And, you know, I still think, to your point, Wade, that's a possibility for the future. Here's what I think wouldn't have been good for Shinsuke Nakamura, and that would be if we had a complete retread of Cesaro from last year, which was someone who was elevated beyond where probably the comfort level of the folks backstage were going to be. And maybe, quite frankly, and I'm sorry to upset people when I say this, beyond what the audience would be willing to support them for, and, you know, the history of the act being ready for. I think Shinsuke Nakamura having possibility behind him is more exciting than him being thrust into the championship match right after WrestleMania. It would almost just feel like April and May were now becoming the months where the person that the fans always wanted to have in the championship slot would get a chance, fail, and then soon be released afterwards. I didn't want that for Nakamura. I think there's other possibilities for Nakamura. I even think, quite frankly, a really high-profile match on a SmackDown with Roman Reigns would be fabulous for Shinsuke Nakamura, rather than building up to a pay-per-view and having all this level of expectation be placed on that match. I think that's been a little damaging to acts like Finn Balor as well, not just Cesaro, where it's like, oh, this is their moment. Well, I think him having a slower burn is actually much better for him. And I still think, you know, if they want to eventually pair him back with Rick Boogs when he returns, you know, that was an act that obviously that WWE fell in love with. So they're not going to damage him too much. And I think that act was always treated very, very well. So I don't know. I think, yes, they changed their mind. But if it was going to be another in the line of someone who just lost to Roman, I don't know that that's such a bad turn for Nakamura to have avoided.
All right, very good. Let's go back to Jay for any follow-up. Did we cover your points well? Is there anything you want to correct or augment?
Yeah, I do want to correct, I guess you would say. Like, I wasn't trying to be the whole I told you so or anything like that. My whole thing was, and I wasn't advocating for Nakamura to get a title shot at the time. I was saying, why is Nakamura the guy who is next in line, or why is he the one who steps up to this? Like, it didn't make any sense to me. And it just, to me, man, things just, yeah, plans change and all of that other stuff potentially, but it never made sense that Nakamura would be the guy to step up. It doesn't make any sense to me that nobody seems to have any sense of urgency to, you know, go after the title. Like, that's the point I'm trying to get to. Like, I don't understand how plans can change. Or, you know, we can get into a position where Roman holds both titles and we're talking about him working less. Like, that doesn't make sense to me. And it just doesn't seem like this thing was thoroughly thought out. That's really what I was getting to.
Yeah, that's why I threw back to you and asked it the way that I did, because I wanted to be sure we're looking at things the right way that you're presenting it. Nick, how do you feel about what they've done post-WrestleMania with Reigns as a unified champion? I said WWE doesn't hint at matches they're not going to deliver, typically. But at the same time, the downside to that is, shouldn't there be more people than are going to get a title shot talking about wanting a title shot? Like, how does that – shouldn't that make the title seem more important if there's a good number of wrestlers who in some form or fashion are talking about wanting to earn a title shot, work their way to a title shot, mm-hmm. hope they're next in line for a title shot on both brands, since there's only one main championship and it's held by one guy?
Yeah, yes. You know, I got to tell you guys, it doesn't stick out to me that that's something that's honestly missing. It just doesn't. I hear you. It's not that isn't something where my brain has gone to. What I would say is it feels more directionless, the act of Roman Reigns, than it has maybe since he's turned this new character on. Mm-hmm. So, yes, yeah, so that I do see is that there isn't the next person in line. I mean, even quite frankly, he referenced it tonight of, you know, there's always been one act and then one opponent, and when that one's done, someone else is waiting for him the next week. Okay, so we're not really there. Is that such a bad thing? I don't know. You know, there seemed to be a little bit of a formula that I would wait on this call when we would have these shows in the past. How many times did we have people call and say, it's just the same formula. Now all of a sudden this one's done and then someone new steps up. Like, so in many ways you can't have it both ways. But I know that's not what we're saying here. I think that there is a point, and it's almost like they're trying to hammer home that Roman has conquered all, and that, yes, I think that you want to have people that are ready to and hungry to step up for him. I think the point I'm trying to make is, if them stepping up to them is and they're not ready for it is going to further damage them down the line, then maybe they shouldn't step up yet. Maybe they should still be on pause. And I think that there's something to that.
All right, very good. Jay, back to you for anything else you want to bring up.
No, I think the point that he just made was a fair point to kind of like mm-hmm. summarize everything. But to me, it's just like, you can't put both titles on the guy and then tell me nobody's ready to step up. Like, I mean, I feel like I don't like it, man. I just don't think that it makes very much sense, man. Like, you know, just from a show standpoint, from a competitive standpoint, it's like, you know, if we just talk about it from a sports sense, it's like, it's not like, you know, you win the NBA championship and then you don't defend it the next season because nobody stepped up to beat you or anything, or you beat everybody along the way. Like, it just feels like it should always be an ongoing process, and everyone should want a title shot regardless to where their position is. Like, the goal should be to get to that point. So it just feels like nobody's stepping up. But at the same time, like, if you wanted to tell the story that he was somehow, maybe they will get to this story, that he somehow, like, kind of ducking Drew McIntyre or running from him. But, you know, that doesn't seem to be the story that they're necessarily telling at this point. Like, it just seems like so directionless, man. And I'm not much of a fan of that.
Well, but also, I mean, I don't know that the story between RK-Bro and Roman Reigns has fully been told. I think I referred to this earlier. I mean, quite frankly, I think that there might be an immediate next chapter where the two members of RK-Bro each kind of say, hey, enough of the tag team talk. We didn't even think that maybe the singles title is kind of, they begin flirting with that idea for themselves. You know, this might be a slower burn of them kind of in the conversation with the Bloodline that then evolves into the tag team fracturing because they both have individual ambitions. So just because it hasn't shown itself yet doesn't mean that's not where they're going.
By the way, I talked about this on the Fix with Todd Martin this week, and I ran a Twitter poll: if or when Randy Orton and Riddle break up, who turns on whom? What do you think is the answer to that, Nick?
I think Riddle turns heel. I voted in that poll.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think Todd has voted on anything for Nick and Tom's? That's my reference to that for the record.
You can tweet him and ask, see what he doesn't say.
I don't think he and I follow each other. but I would say this. The reason I say Riddle would turn heel is I think there's something really endearing about Randy Orton as like the almost like happy, like seeing him happy and being disappointed by someone doing to him what he did to everybody for all those years. I've actually like really loved that concept. And I think that for Riddle to do a quick whip around and to change the character would be very cool. I think that is the best case scenario.
All right. Jay, anything else before any final words from you?
Yeah, man, I actually like that point, and I've always long been in the favor of Riddle being the one to eventually turn on Randy. However, I feel like they've been so successful as a tag team, and like it really hasn't. I don't think that every tag team needs to end with somebody turning on each other, you know. So I think that I wouldn't be upset if they just break them up during the draft. And, you know, they lose the titles right before the draft. They break them up via the draft. Then, you know, maybe like a year or so down the road, they come back to it where it's like, well, we never got our title rematch because the draft broke us up. And then, you know, you may do a turn at that point to see where they're going. Because, like, Randy Orton turning is just too predictable, and he's done it so many times. But, like, Riddle turning might be great, but it's like, where do you really go with Riddle as a heel? I think that Riddle is, you know, more so a great baby face. And there's two more things I want to leave with, man. I know I kind of ran a little long. I appreciate you guys for letting me go a little bit. But the way I would like to see the Roman thing end, I want to see Randy Orton. I mean, they really still haven't explained if it's unified or individually defended as titles, at least not to my understanding. But I'm going off the notion that each title is still its own title. I would love to see Randy Orton take one of those titles off of Roman Reigns and get him closer to the record, because I just feel like his work. I mean, to me, it's been three guys through this pandemic / Thunderdome / era that we're in now. I mean, Roman's been the number one guy, but I think Randy Orton and Seth Rollins have been running like not too far behind him. So I think Randy deserves that opportunity. And I also think that Randy Orton is the most over babyface in WWE right now. And, you know, do you guys believe that he's more over than Cody Rhodes right now? Or, you know, where do you guys stand as far as how I feel about how things can play out? And, you know, I'll leave on that note. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Thanks. Good question. Nick, take that first.
I'm a little confused about the Google question with regards to Randy.
Yeah, wait, just is Randy more over than Cody? Is Randy is this good for Randy? And I'll even broaden it out. I mean, is this about as rock solid of a fresh main event babyface Randy Orton? Those three boxes being checked. When's the last time he was this fresh as a babyface at a level where people wanted to see him main event in a world title situation? I think he's at that. I think he's back at that point at a way that I haven't seen in a long time.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot here to unpack on Randy Orton, but he is in many ways the most interesting character on this show that we just watched because of the depth of history that he has. You know, let me peel back the onion on this thing. Do I think he should be champion right now? No. I also think the fact that he was champion in the COVID empty arena era for that brief period of time, honestly, it takes away from him being champion again in this immediacy. You know, it's almost like if he had if he was going to have another run, it should have been saved for with a real extended pause in between those runs to make it feel a little bit more special. I, in many ways, think he is so compelling right now because he's not in the championship picture, because there's the level of him. You know, wait, he's always gotten the incredible pop, no matter where he's been on the card, because he is that star with a magnitude. He's been a sustained member of the roster forever at this point. He's someone that, if you go to a show as a live audience member, he's going to get the superstar pop because he is a superstar for many years amongst the cast of Also-Rans. So, you know, he has been that reliable force for WWE viewers that are always going to give him that respectful, really overly deferential, I think, reaction. This is the most likable of the characters that he's ever had. And that's the difference right there. And that's where I think the investment comes in. But I don't think you necessarily have to, quote, reward that with the championship. I think the reward is him being over and as enjoyable as he is right now. In many ways, you take that too far and the likability goes away a little bit. So I think a lot of the things that make him likable is the fact that he's so obviously contributing to Riddle. And that it doesn't feel like such a selfish act anymore. And I think that's to the benefit. I think you put him one-on-one with Roman Reigns. Yeah, sure, it'll be electrifying the first time you see it. Then pretty soon it will feel very much like the same WWE you've been watching for the past 20 years. So I think what makes it so good is that it feels like he's contributing to the future. That's my opinion about it.
Yeah, that's a good point. All right, well, keep rolling through calls here, and we'll go to the aforementioned Sean in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Sean, you answered the call. What did you think of SmackDown? And how you doing?
Wade, well, first of all, Wade, it feels like, I mean, I hear you all the time, every day, but it just feels like I haven't talked to you on the phone in, ages. How are you, first of all? And Nick, my dude, I missed you, man. I missed you. How are you guys?
Good. I know, you know, if I don't talk to you, but you're still listening to me, I understand the bond is still there, but there's no replacing talking.
Well, Sean, I'm going to say I miss you too, since Wade apparently can't bring himself to say those words. So it's so great to hear you and to be back talking to you. But Wade went on this defensive rant. I apologize for that. I mean, you as the caller deserved better than that reaction.
I was heading that way. I was saying nothing beats an actual in-person phone call like we have here, you know, and Sean, it's great to talk to you again. It feels like it has been too long. So edit out all that nonsense from Nick in the middle there.
Wait, that's just literally the second caller in a row who started off with an attitude towards you. I love that.
All right, Sean.
That's the charm of Nick. Wade, you know that. That's the charm of Nick.
Oh,
he's got to get some good stuff in there. I mean, he has to. Okay. That's the fun of it. And I should say, Nick Barbati. I love the way Tom always says it, too. I always enjoy that. Nicholas Barbati, how are you doing
But that's
today?
Not even my name. That's not even how anybody says it. It's Nick Barbati. And suddenly, this long floral definition comes in.
Sorry. But good conversation. I enjoyed it. I actually had to catch up because I got home a little bit later than I wanted, so I had to catch up. But I did. I made it. So I was thankful for that because I had to talk to both of you guys. The show was actually, you know, really good. I enjoyed it. I wanted to just go back to the Ronda Raquel really fast. I know, you know, Mike kind of talked about it, and you guys kind of, you know, harped on it a little bit. But I just wanted to say that I was nervous when Ronda first, you know, did the open challenge, which, I mean, I liked the open challenge, but her doing it was a little like, but I didn't want to judge it because I wanted to see what happened, who came out, how it played out, which I don't do that sometimes. I kind of rush to judge it. And then when Raquel came out, I was like, oh, I don't know. Raquel's not good in the ring right now. She's kind of iffy. She's still young, still developing. You know, what are they going to do? But then I thought they did it really, really well. That was one of Raquel's better matches that I've seen anywhere. I thought it was very well done. She got, you know, they protected her great. I thought she got a lot of good offense in. And I thought the finish was good, the way it needed to be. Ronda needed to win, but it protects her. What did you guys think of the match, just overall, the whole? Because I did like it. It was good.
Nick, anything you want to add to what we said earlier?
No, I think it was a totally positive experience as a viewer. You know, Sean, you have been, and I think rightfully so, really, you know, critical of SmackDown recently. And I have to tell you, watching it live, as I've said many times, I usually watch it the morning after, on Saturday mornings before we actually record Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Adventure. But to watch it live on a Friday night for the first time in a while was actually really interesting viewing. At no point did I feel like I did. It did out of habit almost go to like fast forward through the commercial breaks. I was like, oh, wait, I can't do this. This is live. But I really that was to me the portion of the show that Ronda Rousey segment was. Where I thought, like, this is where the show, if I'm watching it live, feels more important. This is where, if I'm just going through the channels and I say, oh, wow, that's Ronda Rousey. And, you know, then looking at it with a fresh pair of eyes and seeing this entirely new person in Raquel there, you know, she's an eye catcher. So that in itself, I think, was important. Mm-hmm. But we weren't, it immediately jumped from the, you know, a great Kali type thing of having just like some really tall person, as I referenced Omos earlier, that yes, is eye catching, but real quickly you like, oh, this feels awkward and clunky. And I think, you know, if I'm Raquel, I am celebrating my ass off tonight, and I'm also working really hard tomorrow because I think it was such a strong starting point for her. And the next time is going to be important. Yes, I agree with you. It's almost like, was it too good for its own good in that she can't recapture that magic again? That I think is something she's going to have to prove as a new act, that this is something that she has in her, that she can go again and have another really great match. To me, I felt like Rousey did her part too in really making that segment work. And I think it wasn't just from the promo, it was mm-hmm. in the in-ring and how smooth she was in there. I thought all of it just connected and it just worked. And there wasn't – you didn't leave this show feeling like you were missing Charlotte, because it did feel a little like a fresh page, a new page. And, you know, I have to say this, Wade. There was something about it where it's like, you know, obviously I wasn't alive during the, like, Bruno Sammartino era. But there's something about when Ronda holds the championship that feels very old school like that, and what I would imagine that to be, where you don't really expect her to lose the title, but her slaying these dragons – feels like of a bygone era, but in a really cool way. And I felt that during her first championship run, and I almost like recaptured some of that feeling in this run too. And there's something I think very, very good about her holding the championship, and I think tonight was an example of that.
Sean, yeah, any follow-up?
Yeah, no, I agree with everything you said. I thought it was, you know, it was good. I thought they did it well, and I'm curious to see where they go, if they do more. They have to worry about, like you said earlier, Ronda wrestling a little too much. I don't want her to wrestle all the time, but if they do it the right ways and kind of limit it in certain spots, I think it can be really well done, and I'm curious to see where they go. But I wanted to say, bring up too, Shotzi is not a good challenger. If she faces Ronda, it's got to be a squash. Like Shotzi, I'm not impressed with her at all. I'm not with Mike on that. I don't like her character. I don't like her in the ring. I don't like her. I mean, the heel thing could have maybe worked, but it didn't go anywhere. I'm just not a fan of it. I don't think they should do much with her. I mean, give her a match, but it shouldn't go very long. Going back to
Sean,
Corbin,
I don't disagree
real
with
fast,
you on that.
And, yeah, go ahead.
No, yeah, I was going to say, I'm sorry to interrupt. I don't disagree with you. I wasn't necessarily agreeing with Mike earlier. What I would say for someone like him who is a fan of Shotzi is I do think, to reiterate a point I made earlier, is there's a self-consciousness in how Ronda's being presented, and to not have her be too abusive, I guess you could say, for lack of a better word, over the other acts. I think that there's an intentionality to not have her be so dominant. I think you even saw that by the fact that she didn't win at WrestleMania. You know, I think that there is a very careful, you know, rollout with her here. And yes, I think in theory, she should be squashing Shotzi. I think that that makes a lot of sense. Do I think that would happen? No, I think you're going to see more of these 9-minute matches.
Yeah, I agree. Going back, and I appreciate Mike, you know, his thoughts on it. I just don't agree with that particular thought.
Mm-hmm.
But going back to Moss and Corbin, part of it was, yeah, Wade, you did bring that up, and I honestly didn't really think about it initially, but then when you talked about that, yeah, that was pretty bad. But then I just wish they would have ended it. I just wish they'd move on from it. And the only thing I think could be good is if maybe they were biding their time to make Madcap more serious, because that's the only way this is going to work. If they just have them wrestle another dumb match after a few weeks and Madcap just comes back and does the same stupid thing, then this is meaningless and just doesn't go anywhere. I mean, they've got to make him more serious, especially after the way Corbin attacks him. If he just comes back laughing and acting like a goofus, then this is going to go nowhere. What do you think about that?
Nick, the state of Madcap and what we saw tonight, it felt a little more intense. Like, I mean, that was a pretty serious angle for characters who haven't really had an edge to them to this point. What'd you think?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, how many of these head in a chair things do we have to see where the person who gets their neck crushed shows up the next week? I mean, like, that gimmick has been damaged. I think my issue with the Corbin stuff is that his feuds go on way too long. And, you know, I almost feel like with Madcap, it's like you have to strike while the iron's hot. And he was hot a month ago. And, yes, you need the mandatory match against Baron Corbin. And you almost expect it to be a multi-monther, but I don't think it needed to be in this case. I think Madcap is the hot act coming out of this thing. I mean, he really looks the part. He has the body of a star. You know, he is likable. He is very watchable. But at the same point, when you watch this show, there are a lot of fresh acts that are developing right now, if not fresh, brand new acts. So the two pieces of staleness on this show to me were the Madcap and Corbin segment and the presence of New Day. Those are the things that stick out to me as being of, you know, a season too late. They're like the pair of jeans that were left over from the winter collection and we're in the spring right now. Like, we need to freshen them up and, like, give them a new, you know, stitching.
Wait, we're supposed to change jeans every season?
Wade, my advice to you is maybe change jeans once a decade. I think I've seen how you dress before, and, like, let's be real, that's not the seasons is not your problem.
Whoa, I didn't know you saw how I dress, but okay. that went sour quick.
Wait, we've had talks about this.
Oh, no,
before.
We have. Yeah. I didn't give you a tour of my closet and my jean collection, but geez, your imagination might not be that far off.
No, but you know what I mean, though? I think those are back to, again, almost like, you know, a little bit of a bygone thing. Like, we need to freshen them up. And, you know, gosh, was it Nick earlier on Wade that made reference to the trombone thing?
I think so,
That was a problem. You know, it is a problem. It's very annoying to listen to. And it just is – it makes that New Day segment, and not just the New Day people, the wrestlers in it, the entire segment – feel like, okay, maybe this show is worth turning the channel for. Like, there's no reason for that not to feel fresher and more enjoyable. They recognized how annoying the King stuff was and scaled that back. Why would you let this back on the screen? And, you know, when you talk about things that just seem absurd, like right before the commercial break, when either Kofi put Xavier on his shoulders or vice versa, you know, it just seemed, you know, like, pointless in a competitive match. And why would you root for somebody who takes the match so without seriousness? I mean, it just doesn't seem like anybody worth rooting for. Right?
Yeah.
I totally agree.
Yeah, I agree.
I totally agree. I'm nodding along here.
Yeah. And by the way, I love the Butch character. I think Butch is the best character on SmackDown aside from Roman Reigns. You can mark that one down. I think he's fantastic.
And he looked serious tonight.
Yeah. Isn't it amazing that it almost seems like the act of that, well, they changed the name of that act on a weekly basis, but Fight Night now, it seems what they're settling with, is it's about him. It's about him at the end of the day, whereas they were kind of like the side piece to Sheamus. If I'm watching this show tonight, the main act of that, it's all about Butch. And I think he held up his end of that in a big way.
I do too.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think, Sean? What do you think of Butch? I mean, I know there's a lot of outrage over, you know, Pete Dunne, who I didn't think was ever destined to get a push on the main roster, getting presented in this way. But if he's, you know, I made the case, if he's going to be on SmackDown or Raw, it's not going to be how people want him, how they imagine him being presented on NXT UK or in AEW or in New Japan or, you know, whatever. It's a different set of requirements. And so, yeah, Sean, what do you think?
That's an interesting question, Wade, because I haven't really gotten to see a lot of characters like this or the way they're utilizing him. I guess I was initially down on it, but then when they did the quote unquote Where's Waldo crap and like where is he and all this junk, I was like, I don't really care for that. But if they make them like tonight, I like the way they use them, and I think I like where they're going with it. I'm intrigued. I'll say that. He's good. He's good in the ring. I mean, he's the this maniac character. I think can go somewhere. I'm curious to see where they go with it. I'm going to wait and see, I guess, approach right now because it's still kind of – I just think he's got to get out of this him beating Kofi and then Kofi beating Sheamus and then Ridge beating – they're just all six just going nowhere, and they're all just going to a bunch of random matches that just don't really mean anything, at least I feel like at this point. And going back to what Nick from Brattleboro, I love you, friend, and you're exactly right, what you brought up with that trombone, Wade, I was like, oh, God, like that again? Like –
yeah.
They got it. New Day has run its course like a long time ago. Like they lasted a long time. I know they're selling merchandise and that's why they're sticking together. I get it. But just move on from it. Do something different. It's just not working. Just because the fans are into it and kids are into it doesn't mean we all have to be subjected to it for a long period of time. So I'm done with that.
When their music started tonight, Sean, boy, there was a lady on camera in the crowd who was very excited that the New Day was coming. Wow. I mean, those people are still out there. And, I mean, obviously to each their own. You know, I mean, everybody can be a fan of whoever they want. But I am going to, I don't know, not be pleased with you if you find the trombone or the lack, as Nicky pointed out, the lack of seriousness in the midst of a fight, endearing and admirable.
Yeah, right, I want to say two other just quick things. First, Wade, I want to say real fast, I'm sorry about your wild, man. You guys have had a lot of just sports trouble. It's just it's sucks. I do feel for you there. I know what that feels like, especially with my Cubs, like as long as they lasted, and they finally won something, but it still was bad. Just wanted to bring that up real quick. Then going back to – and I liked in the women's tag team title match when – I love how the referees just all of a sudden, it's weird how they see certain things, but then they don't. It's just like, oh, well, all of a sudden he sees her foot on the ropes. And it's like, but there could be another match where that same thing would happen, but he all of a sudden doesn't see it and they win. And it's like, I love how WWE just picks where the referee is going to see something and when he's not. I kind of laugh at it. I'm like, okay, it's fine in the midst of this story, but what did you think about? Was it funny? Did you see that and kind of laugh, or what did you think when the referee all of a sudden saw it? And he was in a weird position, so I don't know how he saw it because he was kind of in front of what was going on. So was that funny to you guys or not when you first saw that?
Go ahead, Nick.
I mean, it didn't stick out to me as blatantly absurd, other than I think it's just the reffing situation in WWE is sloppy, and it's completely inconsistent, and it does feel like, you know, the reactions of the referees are just to get through to the ending of that match. It doesn't feel like there's a consistency of we need to have a uniform behavior so that when something is caught or not caught, it means something. So I think it's just unfortunately something that we've getting used to of the sloppiness in their presentation. It's really an unnecessary loss for WWE to take, is to have those moments where they just seem like you're calling out as just messy, and I don't like it, and I do wish it's something that they would tighten up, because it seems like a quick fix and an easy fix and an unnecessary self-inflicted wound.
Sean, anything else you want to bring up before we move on?
Yeah, just one more quick thing, and I'll get off. I wanted to just say, when you guys are talking about the Riddle Orton, number one, I love what RK-Bro is doing. Like, it's fantastic. I mean, I just enjoy the living heck out of it now. I didn't think I would, but the more you watch it, the more you enjoy it. And the crowd is behind it, and Riddle's doing good, and his, you know, his role, what he's being asked to do. Orton is the most enjoyable he's ever been. Like you guys said, I'm in lockstep with you. The question is, let's say, for instance, I'm with you, Nick, as far as I would, if anybody's going to turn, I want it to be Riddle. Like, number one, if Orton turns, that's just don't do it. So if Riddle turns, I do feel like it would have to be somewhat soon, because if you wait too long, then it feels like, it's not going to mean anything. Like, when would it be good where they could say, okay, if we're set on this is what the storyline's calling for, we're going to turn Riddle heel, we're going to go for it, and we're going to see what happens. When would be a good time to do it? And that's what question I was going to ask you guys. Wade, always good to talk to you, man. I'm glad it's been too long. Hopefully I'll do it a lot sooner this time. Nick, always appreciate talking to you, man. You guys are the best. Thank you for taking my call, as always.
Hey, Sean, before you go, real quick, is he still there?
Yeah.
Sean, can you throw Tom and I some topics to talk about tomorrow? We were going to do a mailbag, and we could use some love if you could send us some ideas for us. So then, too, in terms of when could Riddle turn heel? To me, what I would kind of approach it as is have Riddle win Money in the Bank, but simultaneously have Randy have a championship match against Roman, and then have maybe Riddle cash in mid-match a la Seth Rollins, and then have it turned on that way. I think that's the way – that would be a really interesting way for him to turn.
Cool. Thank you, Sean. We'll keep rolling through calls here. Some people have been on hold quite a while, and we'll go to Ryan in Cumberland, Maryland next. Ryan, thanks so much for holding. What have you got first for us today?
My first question is on Charlotte Flair and that devastating submission move that they showed from the premium live event. They said she'd be out indefinitely. So what do you think the timetable is for her return?
Nick, what they've created a story for Charlotte being gone.
Yeah.
What do you think of the story they've told with Charlotte post backlash, and where do you think it circles back?
Well, you know, it's almost like we've gotten used to Charlotte being around for a while and then going away for a decent amount of time. I think we've seen that that kind of pattern for years now, which, by the way, I think is a good pattern for wrestlers to be in. It's like for years, many of us, Wade, I think you especially have advocated for cycles for WWE wrestlers to be able to catch breaks and, you know, recoup some of their strength in their body and let their body rest and all that kind of stuff. When will she come back? I mean, first of all, I think the story was fine and it was perfect for her to use that submission match to lead to her to have a break. I don't mean this to be a cop out, but it's the same answer about Sasha Banks. She'll be gone until they need her. And I think, you know, maybe around SummerSlam seems to be when she kind of peeks her head back in, and that should be enough time for her to, you know, catch some relaxation and some personal time to do what she needs to do and whatever is going on in her personal life to get her there. But I think SummerSlam is going to be an interesting time, especially if, you know, in the interim, we know that Asuka is now back. If we're going to have Bayley come back, if we're going to bring Sasha back into the singles realm at that point, I mean, that's a lot of moving parts. And Sasha, Charlotte is unnecessary at that point. If you already are, then have the backdrop of Ronda Rousey, Becky Lynch, that are there, Bianca Belair, of course. You know, that's a really strong cast. So I think Charlotte can quite frankly come back as late as October if she needs to and still be just fine. And you know what? The good news is when she comes back, she's still going to be main event worthy. And that's the great thing about how she's been presented. And in many ways, having these breaks along the way have really helped her get to that level of consistency.
All right, very good. Ryan, number two.
My second question is on Sami Zayn. They refer to him as the locker room leader. With Roman Reigns being gone, I guess he is the locker room leader right now. Does he actually do that in real life, or is that just something he does on television?
I mean, it's whether he does it or not in real life is immaterial to the fact that it's a shtick that's meant to seem as laughable and absurd and delusional in his on-air role. I mean, Sammy's really respected by his colleagues. I don't really know if in today's WWE, where you show up on basically a TV set and, you know, you've got people coming to you and the producers and stuff, you work out your segment, you go do it and it's over. It's not like they're on the, you know, living life on the road to the same degree that they were in the past. And it's much more corporate. So whatever locker room leader once meant, it means something different today. And it, you know, your mileage varies based on where you are on the roster, and different wrestlers have different people that they look up to. I haven't heard that Sammy is like a traditional locker room leader. And to be a locker room leader, you kind of, I don't know, I'm not quite sure Sammy's resume matches up to the traditional standard, but he's certainly somebody who, like I said, is widely respected in all facets of what he brings to the ring and to the show. Nick, your thoughts on that?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, I would have no knowledge one way or the other of what he's like backstage, but he presents himself on TV as if he's a locker room leader. He presents himself with a high level of quality and just commitment to his character. And I think, to me, is a fantastic representative to anyone backstage on how they should be on camera. So if that makes someone a locker room leader, I think he does do that.
All right, and Ryan, third item.
My question is on Roman Reigns. They said he's going to be working a part-time schedule. You know, what exactly? Is it just to be spending more time with the family, or did he land like a role with Fast and Furious again, or is it going to be like a Marvel thing that he's doing, like a T-shirt or something else going on with him?
Well, I think Roman's been sort of part-time for a while. I think the word can be interpreted broadly. It's just there's going to be stretches of time that he's not more stretches of time that are longer that he's not around, including on major pay-per-views, and the guy they're leaning on to be the centerpiece main eventer more often now under this new deal. And I don't think he's explicitly said, but I mean, it's not a secret that Hollywood is a good fit for him and something he's interested in. And I think they're interested in him. And now is kind of the time to start exploring that. There could be other issues going on that he's not talking about that are personal, but I haven't heard. Nick, what do you think about what Ryan asked, but also just the idea of losing Roman as a weekly fixture on Fox and how that changes things? You talked about Charlotte being, you know, gone and then back, gone and then back, and mm-hmm. that can be something she earned, and it can actually make her feel more special. But you can also have such a thin roster of top-tier guys. It can have a pretty, I don't want to say devastating, but significantly noticeable effect if suddenly SmackDown weeks at a time is without the leader of the bloodline.
Okay, so I actually, the word in my mouth was devastating. And then right before you came in, I think it is devastating.
Right? Yeah.
And I think, honestly, with the absence of Roman without the presence of someone like Brock to offset it, to at least make it, listen, I think the quality of them is, there's a big difference between them, but still like feeling as though there's someone really special on the roster, I think that's crippling in many ways. I really do. I think that that's just one of the things that you cannot deny is the rise of SmackDown is directly linked to the rise of Roman Reigns' new character. And it's not new anymore, but that was they came up together, I think, in terms of quality and really establishing SmackDown as the brand worth watching. Without Roman there, oh my gosh, I mean, you know, when we talk about Randy Orton, for example, earlier, Wade, we had a conversation about this is, you know, a real high point for him. That could quickly become the dark days of Randy Orton real fast if you overexpose him and have to lean in heavily on some of these acts that we've seen for 1,000 years before. You know, my hope is that we don't reach that point with Roman. I mean, I don't know anything in terms of what kind of schedule he could have and what that might look like. And would, you know, we've seen other times when Brock Lesnar has been a champion and gone much longer without defending a championship. And could we just, you know, have be tricked into or just allow ourselves to ease into that type of distance being placed over the championship reigns, championship defenses? Yeah, maybe. But I do think his presence would just be, you know, would be jarring. And I don't know how you get through that. I think the show instantly becomes less meaningful. And that's a problem. I think that's a major, major problem. It's also a problem that you're so dependent on one person. So, you know, but the fact is that that's where we are. That is where we are. So, my goodness, that's a frightening prospect for me.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Ryan, appreciate it. Is anything else you want to add before we go?
Well, I just want to point out that about a month ago or two, I went to see Roman Reigns in State College, and I made the drive up there just prickly to see him wrestle Drew McIntyre, so I think that's going to have a huge impact on House Show business since I made the drive up there, and probably a lot of other people are going to do that too.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it will have an impact on business. I mean, WWE is, you know, immune to feeling too stressed out with the TV deals they have, but man, Roman's a big deal, you know, and being without him is going to affect attendance. Cause as Nick points out, they're just, it's a show very much that's been very much built around him and feels special because he's on it. He's elevated the SmackDown brand, carried the Fox era of SmackDown, and it's going to be different. And I don't know how prepared they are. And you know, Nick, I don't think you're sitting here going, oh, don't be worried. Drew McIntyre is just hanging out ready to fill in for him.
No, oh my goodness, no. That is not the one.
Yep, yep. All right, very good. Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it.
Okay, thanks for taking the call.
Of course, thank you. All right, we'll go next to Kyle in Baltimore. Kyle, thanks for holding. What's on your mind tonight?
Yeah, so I was going to really talk about this whole Roman Reigns double champion thing that I'm not filling in. I don't worry about everyone's been super high on him being champion, and I'm probably the only person who's not. I think he's been he's not been around. I keep comparing him to Becky Lynch because there's the only good comparison I can think of here, that when Becky was around, now you have to tell me, I don't know if because I didn't call throughout the time when Becky held both championships. As far as I get the sense of that when she was double champion, people didn't like it because she was on both shows every single week until she lost the title the month later. With Roman Reigns, he has not appeared one time without a challenger at all since he became double champion. I thought they would make some type of an announcement tonight where Adam Pearce would say that you're going to be defending the title to whoever at Hell in a Cell or something like that, because they're going to have to do that. I'm not a fan of what they've been doing with him. He's just around. He's just there. And it's like, now they're just teasing the unification tag team matches, like, and they're still, like, either do it or don't do it. They go back and forth with that as well. So it's like, it's about RK Bro and the Usos and Roman Reigns isn't doing anything important. So Roman Reigns could be doing the best regard he wants to, but if people had a problem with Becky Lynch as a double champion, why are people are super high and positive about Roman Reigns as double champion? I think it's both worse. But I think I'd rather like Becky more because I'm a Becky fan. I don't care about Reigns. So that's probably the other thing for me. So,
all right, Nick, what say you to Kyle?
I mean, I had no problem with either of those Reigns. So I don't know what to say necessarily. Here's the thing. Kyle, I think there's just an inherent thing of people want their favorites to have the championships, and if they see someone else having two, it feels inherently selfish to them or as if they're being denied something. So it, as you yourself just indicated, it comes to personal preference over the performers. I think there is something that is Roman Reigns needed to help elevate the WWE championship, whether anybody wants to admit it or not. Under Big E and Bobby Lashley and that whole era, it was good from a historical perspective for those individuals to be holding the titles and important in many ways. However, the title itself was not seen with the reverence that it has over the years. It needed some level of respect being added to it so that when hopefully Big E in the future comes back for Lashley challenges for again, it means more than it had for a while. So I do think Roman holding that championship really helped elevate it from where it was, which was really headed towards being a mid-card championship in comparison to the Universal Championship. So I don't think there's anything wrong at all with him holding both championships.
All right, Kyle,
okay.
What else have you got for us? Or you can respond.
Yeah, well, I mean, I kind of disagree. If he's not going to be showing up on Raw, then it's like, what Cody wants to be champion, but he's just still not really, clearly don't care. So I guess for right now, he don't care. But anyway, when it comes to But yeah, but then when it comes to like the women's division, I'm just not. It's so lackluster of top stars because all of them are Raw that I least care about. This besides Sasha and Raquel, everybody else is on Raw that I like what they're doing. They just brought back Alexa and Becky and Bianca and all and have credible women. There's credible stuff on SmackDown I mean, on Raw that I'm into than I am with SmackDown. It's so crazy that there was a time where SmackDown was the greatest show ever and Raw has been a terrible show. But lately it's been the complete reverse since really last year and throughout this year, bringing in Cody Rhodes, even though I'm not a fan of him, but he has been interesting enough with his stuff with Seth Rollins and the stuff with Bianca, and even though she's kind of not doing anything right now as champion, but with Becky and Asuka and now Rhea in this faction with Edge and Priest and stuff like that. That's what I'm interested in. Everything that's happened on Raw and SmackDown is like, what has happened on SmackDown? Really nothing, not that exciting. I like Raquel. I think Sasha's either get out of this tag team or do what she did in 2020 where it become, you know, go face the champion again, you know, as tag team champion. But it feels like SmackDown, there's no direction of where SmackDown is going. So I just don't know what they plan on doing heading into the summer for SmackDown.
What do you think, Nick? What's the lay of the land heading there?
And for the women's division, you're saying?
Yep.
Oh, yes, okay. Well, I think what you're going to see in the immediacy was what was hinted at tonight, which is Ronda going up against some of the Shotzi's and Aaliyah's for the time being. I think that Bayley's due back, and I think Bayley is probably the next big competitor that is going to go for one of these championships, whether it's Bianca or Ronda. And so let's tease it out. I mean, I think Raquel is someone that showed real worth tonight. Is that something you fast track for the initial pay-per-views coming up or the initial premium live events, or do you save it for a big match at SummerSlam? I think SummerSlam is where WWE would probably unveil a real name act against Ronda. And I think that shows itself in terms of either Bayley or Sasha Banks serving that role. And I think, Kyle, you would love Sasha Banks being back in the conversation, if I remember correctly. But I do think that for Ronda to still be Ronda, that is the level that she's going to need to be at for SummerSlam. So I think you're going to see someone of that, the four horsewomen type ilk that she'll be going up against. And for the sake of this conversation, I think it should be Sasha.
All right, Kyle.
Yeah, I mean, because I don't know who else is there. There is this Sasha, there's Raquel, and there's Ronda, as far as I'm concerned, top of my brain, who are credible names I could think of who could be in that spot. And it's like, this is the problem. This is the death of credible opponents in the women's division and also in the men's division as well for Roman Reigns on SmackDown. That's why I'm surprised he hasn't even showed up on Raw to try to have a challenger or something. He has to at least defend the championship. That's the other problem with Reigns I also have. He just doesn't want to defend the championship. And it's like, how long can that last? He already left the people without defending the title. I just hope this will lead to Randy and Reigns at Hell in a Cell if that's the direction. And then after that, then hopefully they'll make some type of plan or, again, like I said, some type of an announcement or something. The fact that, and here's the thing too, I just realized, Cody Rhodes commercials saying that if he wins Money in the Bank, you go to the main event of WrestleMania. Like, what? What? Since when? They keep making that wordy. What does that even mean? So what, the briefcase, you got to wait all the way until April? What's going to happen? What is the Royal Rumble? Are we going to have the Royal Rumble? Is it like, I don't get that. What's up with that? Why are they consistently playing that commercial? Then now a few weeks now, but playing that. What's up with that? I'm confused with that.
Nick, explain that to Kyle. Explain it to me. What's going on there?
Well, I'm you're losing me again. What am I explaining, Wade?
The fact that Cody said if he wins Money in the Bank, it's what was the phrase, Kyle? Just
They said that you go to the main event to WrestleMania.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Wasn't punching a ticket, but there's been a decent amount of conversation about that, yeah.
Sure. Well, but that fits his character, and it fits his motivation of making good on a family legacy. And by the way, I think that that's a babyface move to take, is to pre-announce, you know, where you're going to be doing it. And, you know, from his initial promo when he came back on Raw, that was his motivation, was the legacy part of taking back the family name and putting it at the highest level of respect. And I think that in the WWE universe and their world that they present, there is no bigger historical tether than WrestleMania. And I think that actually totally fits the character.
I think I wasn't really talking about Cody, but the way he was, it was, since he's been promoting Money in the Bank all this, I'm not saying for him winning. I'm just saying as a general, if he is talking about himself, then whatever. But I'm talking, he just said that like a general sense of it, like you win the briefcase, he goes to the main of WrestleMania. I know that Seth Rollins cashed in at WrestleMania, but again, that was the whole. It was like the thing about surprises. If they are now seeing where it's going to happen, do you have to cash it at WrestleMania itself? Then what's the point of the Royal Rumble then? So that's the part where I'm saying that this, I'm so confused. Like, why would you want to be? I thought the whole point about the biggest is element of surprise of not knowing when you're going to cash in. That's saying, we win this briefcase in July, we're going to hold on to it all the way until April, and then that's when I'm going to say, I'm cashing in this thing right now. It's like, that seems kind of bizarre, and that's the direction they plan on taking it. That's my thought process. That seems really bizarre. That's it. He will do
well,
everything.
Well, it is bizarre. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah. It's the fact that, yeah, just the wording of it, and they mentioned it once before when they first played that commercial, and then they keep playing it again and again and again and again. It's like, so are they really going to have whoever wins the briefcase to hold on to the contract all the way to WrestleMania? Then whoever wins the Rumble is going to pretty much forced to go after the other champion because that's what's available. That seems odd to me. That's bizarre. Like, you would think it would be what Money in the Bank was made for, element of surprise. And so I don't know. I think I don't know what they're planning on doing with that. I think that's a bad move if they end up doing that. But what do you think about that entire thing? Because that the wording of that is just so odd.
Well, it is odd, but I also don't think, you know, the only option you presented is that their only option, which is, okay, if the Money in the Bank is announced for one match, then suddenly the Royal Rumble must go to the other. I think in WWE, with these two opportunities, the two biggest opportunities of the year, they could converge into the same match, which is, you know, someone announces they're going to be cashing in Money in the Bank. But that's also the same challenge, the same champion that the winner of the Royal Rumble chooses. And then you almost have a triple threat match with the winner of the Royal Rumble and the winner of Money in the Bank against the champion. I mean, that's quite epic, if you would. It's, what do they call it, like a multiverse? Is that the new phrase people use for these kind of things? But, you know, do I think that's really going to happen? No, I think what they're showing is just how powerful the briefcase is. And I think that's the message they're trying to get across.
Yeah, I have paused Kyle or put off drawing too many broad conclusions about that. I need a little bit more evidence before I start thinking they're rewriting all the structural things that they've established with the briefcase.
Yeah, it helps out. Just the wording and the whole sentence of phrases to say, like, was so wild. So, but anyway, so I think my final point is that it's just, again, for me, I just hope that whatever they do, they need to have some type of direction on SmackDown, because I've been watching, you know, for the last few weeks, especially tonight. It's like I was kind of finding myself drifted away and not really paying attention, not really caring. So something needs to have firm some type of good storyline or base the storylines with Roman, whatever they're gonna do with Ronda, and then with Sasha and Naomi. They just need more women are, they need more something, because everything that I like is over on Raw. They have, the fact that you would put Lacey on Raw is so weird to me. You know, the whole stuff happened on SmackDown, now she's going to be on Raw. I feel like everything I like is going to be on Raw that I'm into, that I'm interested in what they're doing with their, of everything with them. And then SmackDown is just the rest, whatever. So I hope they do something that makes some sense as a storyline perspective, and then as a show, as a show itself. Because if I'm being confused every single week, and I get that I'm satisfied with Raw, what they're doing every week, yeah, and SmackDown confuses me, I don't know. So I'll leave with that. Thanks for our call.
All right, cool. Thanks, Kyle. Appreciate it. All right, Nick. Anything else you want to add to that?
No, I'm good.
Cool. All right, so let's go to – we'll wrap up here with William in San Diego. William, you're batting cleanup tonight for us. What have we left for you?
Oh, my God, so much pressure. Well, one of the topics I was going to talk about, Kyle kind of beat me to it, but I just thought I'd throw my two cents in there. Plus the whole Money in the Bank thing. I think the wording was something like, you know, men and female superstars will compete for a chance to main event WrestleMania or something like that. And I thought it was odd. Too, but I think my inclination is that, you know, that's just like a sneaky way of saying, like, yeah, technically, if you win Money in the Bank, like, you could cash in at WrestleMania if you want, but, like, they're just trying to sell tickets and seem it make more important than it's previously seen, just because, you know, they're at a stadium, and that's, like, the whole vibe of the commercial is Cody Rhodes standing in the middle of Allegiant Stadium and trying to sell people into going to Vegas. You know, they have all the beauty shots of Vegas, and, oh, it's July 4th of July weekend. It's Vegas. Come on. You want to get lucky, blah, blah, blah. And, yeah, it just seems like they're trying really hard to sell those tickets. But, yeah, that's I think I just want to clarify on that. One of my other topics that I want to talk about, you guys also kind of brought it up, was Butch. I'm in agreement with you guys that at first I was not super sold on the whole presentation of him. I think I was mostly pessimistic, but as the weeks go by, I think I'm sold. And I do think that he's like the standout character from that group. And, you know, I like where things are going with him, but I'm kind of worried about the ceiling for that character. What do you guys see his ceiling as? Because I think it only works if he's got Rich Holland and Sheamus, like, there, like, as the two of them being these big guys that have to hold him back. And even then, they have a hard time holding, you know, this smaller, scrappier guy back. So I don't know. Eventually, he's probably going to have to go on his own. And that's kind of where I'd be worried about him. Do you guys share that concern?
I don't know if concern is the word, but I think it's pretty accurate, Nick, that, you know, he's coming across as a feisty sidekick whose ceiling is not in a land of giants, you know, very high, but is it higher than if he is in, will he last longer and have more of an impact than if he was brought up as Pete Dunne and he didn't have this character? So your thoughts?
Well, I think he's the next Intercontinental Champion. I think he is not a side character anymore. I think today especially showed he is going to be the lead of that group. And maybe not like the strong like leader, but I think he's going to be the breakout of that group. I think the character really works, and I think it's going to evolve and lose some of that, you know, Scrabby-Doo kind of, you know, elements to it, and before he's just, you know, a vicious guy. I think it's good. I think the potential for him is much higher than if he was Pete Dunne. I think Pete Dunne on SmackDown wouldn't go anywhere. I can't close my eyes and imagine, you know, Pete Dunne versus Roman Reigns. I can't, you know, imagine him at the very top level. It doesn't mean he didn't belong. It just means that's not how I see WWE shows being written. Maybe on Raw he would have a better chance, but I do think Butch can go quite far with this. I do, like I said, I do think he will be an Intercontinental Champion sooner rather than later. I think he can exist, you know, in the, the world of Riddle as an example of someone who I think he could be opposite of. You know, listen, these rosters aren't huge, and there's not a lot of great depth at the very top of the card for someone. When we say, like, are they going to make it? Well, it's almost like, well, if you're on SmackDown, unless you're going against Roman Reigns, you're not really making it. And do I see him against Roman Reigns? No, I don't. But I do think he can be a very firmly established, you know, character. I think he could go against a face Madcap Moss. So if once Madcap is more firmly established at the top, and you know, that's not such a bad type of place for him to be in. And I think he is in a really, really good way compared to where it looked like he was going on the week that he debuted as Butch. And also, I think at the end of the day, he's further along than he would be if he was Pete Dunne.
William, back to you.
Yeah, and I think I kind of have like a larger picture question about just the whole role of NXT nowadays, you know, in the WWE ecosystem, because you see a lot of these guys, they come up from NXT, and they have different gimmicks, different names, different you know, outfits or whatever. And just because it's different and because it's the main roster, people will immediately assume the worst, that they're getting buried or, you know, they're losing all their cool factor. But I am in agreement with Nick that I think his ceiling is larger than if he just would have been Pete Dunne. So I don't know. Do you think having that NXT system where they play on USA Network in front of, you know, hundreds of thousands of people who watch weekly, and even more people who watch online and, you know, around the world, and they get to know these characters, and then, you know, they get to know them and make judgments about them, and then they move to the main roster, and they're completely different, and it almost seems like counterproductive in a way to still have that system. I don't know, is it still beneficial, or would it be make more sense in an ideal world to kind of go back to like an FCW system where they have like this small local market show that plays, you know, a few people who go there and watch the show every week, but, you know, aside from journalists or super hardcore fans who keep up with that kind of stuff, no one else, you know, really knows like what's going on. We fans don't know like who's coming up the pipe next. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I can't remember what Moxley called it in his book. Off Broadway. We're going off Broadway to he and Seth when they first feuded, and you know, working things out, getting their chemistry and all that. I mean, it does sort of feel like the show now is a window into something we haven't seen before with NXT that at times does, seems like it probably shouldn't be on national television, but, you know, more people are tuning out by the week, so who knows how long that lasts. Yeah, I mean, Nick, how much are you paying attention to NXT?
I mean, I'm not paying attention to it, but here's the thing. I don't know that we have to pay attention to NXT because I don't know that the success of NXT can be measured in anything that we as viewers are seeing. I think it's all about how the wrestlers are developing, and if they are learning at a faster rate, say, with this type of presentation than they would be versus the old one, or is there growth and more preparedness that they as performers are getting through this presentation that they're feeling a higher confidence level, or just, you know, are demonstrating safety, or is anything that intangibles that get them ready for the main roster debut. That's kind of how I interpret it. I know that probably sounds like a cop-out answer, but I would be okay with saying that I don't know from being a viewer on all the benefits of the current presentation based on, and that there would need to be other assessment methods that were taken into account to say that, no, this is actually putting things on track. What I would say that I've learned in the past month with the debuts of people from NXT to the main roster is we no longer need to have panic heart attacks when someone's name gets changed. I think you can be disappointed and frustrated, but it's also pretty crazy how our minds have already quickly adjusted to Gunther and Butch, and how comfortable we are with them being pretty strongly presented for the first, you know, the initial runs on the main roster. And I actually take that as really, really good news, to be frank with you. Not that the names were changed, but how they are debuting, and even Raquel too. I think that Listen, even if all it took was Vince needing to be more involved for these folks to debut and get a higher level of protection, then that's better for the performers in the long run. It might not be the product on NXT that we want to see, but it seems like the wrestlers themselves are benefiting from it. So if that's the case, well, then more power to them.
All right, William, back to you.
Yeah, my other topic, you guys kind of touching it a little, was that Gunther backstage segment. I'm in agreement with Nick that it just seemed like, I don't know, he kind of lost a little mystique just by having him being another guy wandering backstage. And he loses a little bit of that larger-than-life presence by just, you know, like I said,
I agree with you, William.
Guy.
I think you put that well. I'm persuaded.
Oh, thank you, Wade. I knew you would.
Oh, okay. Wait, I'll talk to you later.
Now that I recall, I think I misspoke. I said that I agree with Nick, but I think Nick was making the opposite point, right? He was saying that that he actually liked having Gunther backstage.
Can I jump off a cliff right now? Like, what is? No. I hated it.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead, William.
People will have to go back and re-listen.
It's fairly Saturday for Nick, and we've already ruined his Saturday.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. My question was going to be, because we saw Ricochet there, and I got the sense that maybe they're going to head in that direction. Did you guys get that sense? Do you think that's where they're heading after this whole Drew Gulak and Gunther thing? And would it be too soon? Because I don't know how much stock to put into this anymore. That whole report we saw about how Ricochet was supposedly the number two babyface in SmackDown, and you know, right after that he won the Intercontinental Championship. I don't think that holds much stock anymore. But if it is still true,
I thought he was the number two babyface. If you actually just sat down and listed the active babyfaces, I don't think that was some. I know it was presented as a secret thing that got revealed. But I mean, I have a roster chart and Ricochet was number two on mine because who else was healthy and active? It was more just sort of a note about how thin the roster is. But being number two doesn't matter if number two is someone that the company doesn't believe in or has buried and is desperately looking for someone else to get healthy or turn or fill that spot. It didn't come across to me as he's been promoted. It was more attrition. Now, all that said, Nick, what do you think of the job that we haven't talked about Ricochet? What do you think about the job they've done with Ricochet? And I don't know. I don't know if it was meant to be meta or not, but, you know, his pep talk to Drew Gulak of if I never got up after I got knocked down or if I let things get me down, I wouldn't have this championship right now. I mean, there's some truth to that. I mean, if Ricochet didn't just show up and dutifully do what he was told for a lot of times that he wasn't being utilized that a way that a lot of people thought he should be, he probably wouldn't have gotten to the point where he got this chance. Now, I don't know how much this chance is worth. Ultimately, we'll see. So, Nick, your thoughts.
Yeah, I don't think he's doing an exceptional job as champion. I think he is always exciting and fun to watch in the ring. But if I were the person booking it and watching how his acting is going, I would really not invest in him either, to be frank with you. I think, yeah, sure, the message of that promo absolutely resonated, and it is good, and I'm glad he had this opportunity. But I do think he's a placeholder for the aforementioned Butch, or into this take, I think, and it's actually a much better option, is Gunther coming in and taking the championship and holding the Intercontinental Championship almost hostage, I guess you would say, for an extended period of time. That really works for me. I just don't think I love watching Ricochet matches. They are eye candy for sure. I don't know that I see anything beyond that. And I didn't always feel that way. I feel that way now though. And maybe it's because his confidence was shaken based on being there. I don't know the answer, or maybe I'm just seeing now what others saw all along, but there's nothing that gets me excited when he comes out anymore. I feel like I'm watching, almost like with the reputation for what the old WCW cruiserweight matches were, whether accurate or not. But I just feel like I'm watching eye candy. That's about it.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. All right, William, back to you.
Yeah, and I think my question about that was going to be more, you know, in regards to the possibility of Gunther versus Ricochet, because that whole prelude was to say that regardless of, you know, whether the number two thing is true or not, I do think that they've been putting a lot of or a little more effort into the way that they present Ricochet. But if they're heading into Gunther versus Ricochet, I personally wouldn't have Gunther lose. I would probably have him win the title, even if it's at the cost of Ricochet. So I don't know. Do you guys think that they're a direction that they're heading in soon? Would you advise against doing that match as quickly as they seem to be going? Or maybe I'm just reading too much into it, Ricochet being backstage in that segment at all. But, yeah, if they made that match, who do you guys think they would have go over?
Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of options when you look at the roster, and so I think proximity can be a clue. Just literal physical proximity during a segment can be a clue to where they're going. Nick, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's very reasonable that that's where we're going. I think that, you know, that I think it almost in many ways is a bit obvious, and my issue more with it is having Gunther be the Intercontinental Championship on the same show where Roman Reigns is so dominant with his with the World Championship and the Universal Championship is it feels a little duplicative, and by such as such then becomes reductive of both. So, you know, I don't know that that ideally works for me, but if that's where we go, I wouldn't be surprised by it at all.
All right, William, anything else before we wrap up here?
I'm trying to think, but no, I think you guys covered everything I had. So I'll just let you guys go and have a good weekend.
Thanks, William. Appreciate it. Always good to talk to you. Nick, is there anything else in your notes, sir, that you made a mental note of that we didn't cover and the callers didn't cover that you want to bring up?
No, I think at this point, the only thing I haven't talked about is my blood type and my weight. I mean, I think we covered it all. I think
I mean, let's go there.
175, mark it down. I'm sticking to that. Don't get me on a scale. No, it was a great show. It was a good show. And it was I'm more excited for SmackDown than I was a couple weeks ago. And I think that's the good news here is that things are developing. It is fair and accurate to be nervous about a world without Roman Reigns, whatever era we're entering into. With that said, some of the players that are coming up are worth sticking around for and watching, and I think that's the good news. And I think Ronda stepped forward today in a way that she needed to, and she's going to need to continue to. So maybe the presence of Charlotte not being around will give her the confidence of being the lead on that show, and I think that will be good for her. And I also think a sustained program with Bayley, if that is where we go, would also be very beneficial to her. And I think that if this is where we're going for SmackDown, I think we've got a good couple months ahead of us.
Cool. Nick, tell people how they can follow you on social media and about your show and, you know, pitch them for listening to it and anything else that you want to talk about.
Sure. No, you can follow me on Twitter at Nicholas Barbati, NicholasBarbati. I do a weekly show with Tom Colihue called Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Adventure. It is the best show on the PW Torch arsenal. I think we were called the crown jewel in one of the reviews by a certain other Nick from Brattleboro. but it's such a great, I think it's a really great show, and where we tackle the week in wrestling and in WWE most specifically. But Tom Colihue is one of the, I think, the best analysts out there in wrestling, and I bring the entertainment. So love to have you guys tune in. It's a VIP exclusive, but sometimes we'll make appearances on Wade's Daily Show. So Wade, thank you again always for the opportunity. We have a blast.
It's great having you on. It's been, I was counting down the days to your suspension expired, and I'm glad we could arrange for this.
Wade, I like to think you and I bring a main event feel to these things.
Oh, totally. It's like Charlotte, gone for a while, and then she's back, and it's like it's a big deal.
You like that? Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Excellent. All right, follow me on Twitter at The Wade Keller. Follow our brand at PW Torch. And, of course, check out our main website, pwtorch.com, for breaking news and editorials and my live TV coverage, live pay-per-view coverage. And check out our YouTube channel, youtube.com/PW Torch, or just search PW Torch. All right, thanks, everybody. Thanks to our callers, and we'll talk to you all next time.